AAC meeting, July 10, 2017.
Miss V, if would you please have a microphone for the audience, they would like to introduce themselves. That is Madame Sherry Sassman now.
Sarah will do so. I have written.
No, no, no. This is just your name, name of the audience, please. That's what Madame Chair is asking. To introduce yourself, please.
And on many different child protection committees.
Bernice Anderson down in transportation.
Shemitra Baskerville, First Transit. Santa down in transportation.
Frank Rock, Metro Access.
Conrad Marshall, Transdev.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? been accepted. Thank you. Chairman's report.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just a comment, for thought and discussion. The last sentence of the letter, the AAC recognizes that this level of access is unprecedented by any level of leadership in public transportation. That's a bit over the top. I mean, everything that's said prior to that is absolutely true and absolutely wonderful, and we have a lot of input, but that sentence is a little over the top.
What is that?
Removing it. They're sucking up and then they're sucking up.
Well, how many would like to have it removed? Can we vote on that? Can I hear?
I make a motion that we remove that. Yeah, we remove that last sentence. But leave everything else in. I mean, what about appreciate your right to average and whatever it is, remove that last sentence.
All those in favor?
Hold on. I have a problem with
that. Okay.
Mr. Charles, please use the microphone close to you.
Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. As much as I understand the fellow's objecting to, I also think that there is a level of truth in the statement that ought to be reflected in the minutes. So, at least in my mind, you better to modify the phrase to make it a real phrase without being any superfluous.
Well, the majority voted to remove it. Can I get a vote on how many people want to remove it again?
If I can make Charlie happy and say, if you voted to remove it, you removed it, and then open that for a motion for Charlie to replace it with something a little bit less ostentatious. Yeah, I can interfere with his eating.
Charlie?
I agree
with
that sentence. Thank you, pardon. We didn't hear you, Mr. Charlie.
I agree with that sentence.
Okay, do you agree with
that? I'm sorry, I agree.
Have been removed or have been revised? We both have. What to do is we have to put something in that needs to be put in. Okay, so
not to enter into political discussion, but I'm in favor of it being replaced.
Charlie, can you repeat that without even through at the same time? Because we can't understand what it's saying.
My mother always told me not to talk my mouth off the cheese. Anyway, I was saying I'm in favor of repeal and replace.
Oh, my mother heard that.
Okay, so what if you replace it then? What is your suggestion?
I'd have to hear the language of the sentence again. I don't really remember it since I read it this afternoon, but
I will read the entire sentence. The AAC appreciates the proactive outreach to the disability community and the general public by the GM/CEO. And that is perfect. And my motion was to stop at that period. The next sentence is, the AAC recognizes that this level of access is unprecedented by any level of leadership in public transportation. And that's what we just voted to remove, that you need to replace, if we choose to.
My comment would be, I could live with what you suggested about just sending in half of the appreciation piece. If there wasn't an need to say anymore, I would probably say that the AAC agrees that participation thus provided by Metro has been instructed.
I think we can quit while we're ahead and sure, happy in the new period.
Okay, all those in favor of leaving it as it is, taking it out, and moving on, can I get?
Aye. All in favor of what I'm saying? Taking it out or leaving it in?
Taking it out.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Yes, yes. Taking it out, yes, yes. One, two, if you want to.
I have found the original.
17?
We've made a motion to take it out, and we want the three, or the majority has agreed, Charlie gets out. Okay? All right. We have a letter. Steve, do you have something?
Yeah, I have a late comment, excuse me. I just want to acknowledge the comprehensiveness of the minutes with particular respect to the interaction with the general manager. You know, I wasn't here last month, and so reading this code, I think it's an incredibly informative account of what the conduct of the communication, and so it's very much appreciated.
Steve, I'd also point out that while on your cruise in Europe, you could have listened to the meeting on Spreaker.
Well, while we're talking about Spreaker, it's not accessible for blind people. It doesn't have labels, so you know what means it's button number one, button number two.
Well, what is the button?
It's not accessible.
Okay.
All right, so,
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What would make it accessible? What do we need to make accessible so that somebody blind can understand what's going on?
Well, we don't have a button number one, button number two. It has to be labeled AAC meeting July 5th. Buswell meeting July 17th. It has to have labels. And I was on the phone with Mr. Blake too long trying to find it, and that's not accessible. And then I had my teacher there, he was instructing us, and we were all over the place. Now, everybody's not going to have a teacher there at home. Or in their office. They just want to hear the meeting, and it's not accessible.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. Mr. Blake, what has to be done to make it accessible?
Okay, so let's start. I hope you don't like the food in the back again.
I'm talking about that.
So, and I'm not here to disagree with Ms. Rush. So let me say though that in my walking her through the page, I can't concur that the Spreaker.com website is not accessible. I can concur that the website could benefit from improvements, as many websites can benefit from improvements. I think what happened, well, because when we talk about accessibility and websites and things like that, one, first and foremost, can a screen reader tell you where you are? Now, I was able to listen to her screen reader, which is why I knew where she was located. And at first, I was trying to take her to one page that has all the shows. Her goal was to get to last month's show. And I should have stuck with that. Again, the labels can be improved. The direction, I think, she was able to get to it on Friday. I think with a few more practice, if you ever want to know the next meeting, or we can can walk through some more. I think over time, your skills with it, as some other members or former members have been able to use this service as well, with visual disabilities. I can reach out to Spreaker and inform them that listening to a screen reader, I can see where some challenges can be mitigated to a certain extent by just doing this or that. But I don't know if we're ever going to get to a point where Spreaker is as good, let's say, as Lamont's webpages. Some people already complain, but look at us. Okay, but my point is, I can reach out to Spreaker and make some recommendations based on my walking Ms. Rush through the process the other day and hearing what the screen reader was saying. But I can't, again, concur that it's not accessible because the screen reader did take her through the process with a little help from me, but I can't concur that it needs some help.
A little?
A little. A lot of help from me, yes.
Hey, Mr. Boyd, not to jump on, because I use Spreaker all the time, but it does not have closed caption. And neither does the board meeting. So, you know, when we're talking about accessible, we're talking about vision, but security is closed accessible.
No, that is correct. And I don't know any solution to that yet.
Especially we need a sponsor.
Yeah, perhaps. Yes, sir. So that'll be my commitment to you, Ms. Bellamy, to Ms. Rush and the committee. I learned a lot on Friday walking Ms. Rush through the process. I'll reach out to the company. I'm not going to say I'm super optimistic they'll make a lot of changes. I'm not super optimistic that they'll make a lot of changes, but I'll certainly be very specific in detail with what I learned the other day and see if they can make some positive improvements.
My question is this.
You said, I mean, please close to the microphone, we can hear you.
If this is for this bill, I don't see why you have to pull a light off. You're really using their service. See, I just got a problem with that. That I'm having trouble with my vision. And it might get to a point that I'm going to need to be playing the service. So I want to know, am I going to be able to understand and comprehend what's going on?
I think the answer is yes, but it may take some practice. If you're very computer savvy in terms of using screen readers and being able to navigate a web page, perhaps it'll be a much quicker learning curve. If you're not super computer savvy and able to navigate a very busy web page like the Spreaker web page is, we can encounter some of the challenges, and that's why I have to listen to the screen reader. I knew where I wanted to take Ms. Rush, but it's a very busy website, and that's part of the challenge.
Ms. Blake, one of the secrets to that does make it easier for people, they permit you to subscribe to specific hearings. And so I have signed up for BusRail, Metro Access, and AAC. And so when they come on the air, I get an email from Spreaker saying this has started. And I just push that button and it takes me right to that meeting. And so there is an easy way to use it for not computer savvy people. And so what we might do, I'll be happy to write out the instructions and get to Dr. Ward Wynn, and we can send it out to the rest of the committee, and then everybody can have the simple way of being able to use Spreaker for the vision impaired and for others than the hearing impaired.
That's
right.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Public comment.
We do have one or two people from the public. Ms. Bean, if you
yes,
let me know. Appreciate it.
The minutes of last month's Metro Access Subcommittee contained several questions posed to both Mr. Kent and Mr. White as to the status of so-called Maryland Abilities Ride. Those minutes don't reflect any answer to those questions, although I'm told tonight I'm given verbal assurance that there were answers last month's next executive meeting. But I can't know if they were because I was not here and they're not reflected in the minutes. However, at the end of the package of next week's Metro Access Subcommittee, in the work program, it's indicated that in September there will be a report on the status of Maryland's so-called Maryland Mobility Drive and the introduction of the vendors and the discussion of the range of services to be provided by these vendors. And of course, that if it does occur in September, that on one hand, it's several months late because at the beginning of the year, we were told that the vendors would be selected by late spring, suggesting to me mid the month of May or the latest June. It's now mid-July and they don't have the vendors, and we apparently won't know them until September. Procurement may be a difficult task for this agency. I'm suggesting, especially because the procurement of the new vans 2 months ago caused a bit of a kerfuffle, that maybe there ought to be a procurement advisory committee subcommittee of the AAC, because as it relates to the needs of the disabled, procurement is different than other procurement that this agency would engage in. So I suggest the committee consider having a procurement subcommittee as well. But I'd like to know the answers to those questions before September. Mr. Kent said he could provide them. Thank you very much.
Mr. Kent here?
Yes.
Mr. Kent?
Mr. Kim?
Hello? Good afternoon. I'm just making sure the microphone is safe. Although I'm not convinced, I'll continue anyway. First of all, I want to start off by saying that I have absolutely no objection to Mr. Williams' suggestion that we give our procurement office additional help. I think that's a great idea. Unfortunately, it's not in my area of responsibility at Metro to devise such assistance, but I can tell you that we work very cooperatively with them. And I want to clarify something. You know, we weren't blaming the procurement office for anything. Blaming them when we talked about the vehicle acquisition. We aren't blaming them when it comes to abilities ride. The fact is that when we are asked to give a date when something is going to be finished by, some tasks you can call that date in advance and be very accurate about it, and there are other situations where you can't. In the area of procurement, because we're talking big dollars, and I would think because of the strong sentiments that have been expressed by this committee and by the disability community that they don't want to see Metro prematurely award a contract that does not meet the needs of the community. When Metro puts out a solicitation, we indicate what our requirements are. And there are a lot of people who said, well, you know, if you're going to do business with some of these on-demand transportation network companies, some of them have not always been willing to make certain accommodations. Of late, there are issues in the news about that right now, right here in the district, okay? So we are being very diligent in reviewing the proposals that we received. And we are going to do one thing that I think is most important. Well, you know, we are a little bit late on finishing the procurement for Abilities Ride. We kind of felt like accuracy was more important than speed. So we're not going to award the contracts until or unless we can come back to you and say they demonstrated that they will do everything we asked them to do, and that we believe it'll be done to your satisfaction. If you can't say that, then we have to go back to the drawing board. Now, my belief is that we are going to be able to come back and give you a positive result, but it is taking a little bit longer for us to finish the process because the one thing is something Metro hasn't done before. So, you know, obviously if it was something that we did all the time, it might be a faster process. But since it's new, we have to get it right. So we're asking a lot of questions. And when I say we, I mean those who were involved in the procurement, you know, I have not been. You know, my role comes at the very end where I get to come back and tell Ms. Rush and others who, as she likes to say, watch the watchers, you know, and I get to answer to you and tell you, you know, what the final decision was. But, you know, I think we are going to be able to do what Mr. Orleans said by September. We should be able to, you know, to come out and give you not only a treatment on, you know, who has been awarded contracts, but to have you all ask questions and hear more about the implementation schedule, but we have to get there. So I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to answer this question. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Okay, Mr. August, we are on. Can you assure us that while we're off, you will implement it, and then you come back? You know how you love us so.
Ms. Rush, I do love you so. I love the committee very much. Yes, I can tell you that while the procurement process is likely to finish, sometime I hope in the month of August, you're certainly not going to be implementing anything that fast. So by the time that you all come back for your September meeting, we should be able to give you a full briefing.
Thank you, Mr. Haynes. Ms. Lee, do we have another customer, another holiday coming period?
No.
I
have one more question.
Thank you, Ms. Lee.
Yeah, if I can take a moment in public comment. Question I have in the last minutes, the discussion about the chains between cars on the 7000 series, and that was supposed to have been implemented between the last meeting and this meeting, and this evening coming in on a 7000 car, every other car still has the bumpers between cars, and every other car has a chain. So the question is, when in fact are we going to have the 7,000 cars totally chained?
Did I miss your question, sir? I was in conference with the other Christian.
Yes, the Christian brothers.
That's right.
The question was,
At our last
meeting, we were told that the total refitting of the 7,000 series cars would change between all the cars would be done by now, and it isn't. And so the question is, when will it be? Tonight, it was bumpers changed, bumpers changed, bumpers changed.
Did Ms. Bush also
have a comment? Yes, I read an article in the paper, and they said that it wouldn't happen until 2018 for the 7,000 series.
Okay, so before I say anything, Mr. Blake wants to go first.
I just want to clarify the timeline. The timeline originally was 15 to 18 months, meaning the end of this calendar year. That was our original goal, and we thought we would meet that commitment. There was some design. It seems just easy that you just take those out and put the other ones in. It wasn't quite that easy. So the designs went through a couple of phases before we sent the invite out to the recent demonstration. So now the timeline is early 2018. So in that timeline, because the design is basically where it's going to be, we're confident in the timeline. But the original timeline was the end of 2017.
Thank you. In the meantime, is there anything to stop visually impaired people from tipping over the platform?
Okay, so now I'm going to say something. I think it's important to kind of recap what we identified the problem to be and what we said we were going to do about it and why.
Okay.
Now, the problem is that the regulation says we have to have some barrier that would prevent a visually impaired person from mistaking the gap between the cars as a door. We all understand that. The regulations don't get really specific about the way that they are supposed to work. They're just supposed to work. So what ended up happening was when the 7000 series cars were designed, the engineers said, well, so they have these two pieces of rubber, plastic, something that come together this way. And if I have a light cane, as I go up and down, as long as I hit one of those pieces of rubber, I know something's there. But if I should happen to have my cane go through the center of the two, and the two aren't able to touch each other because they have to bend as the train moves, then there is a potential for someone to, with who's using a white cane, potentially miss this as not a door. Okay. Now, from a technical standpoint, with what was in the regs, the manufacturer took the position, and we took the position that it is a barrier and that it does not contradict the regs. Rather than us try to be clever about it, we knew from what you told us, from what the customers said, that as long as there was a greater possibility that these barriers were not going to be as effective as the old ones, Metro made the decision, based on your advice and on, from the community in general, to switch them to the barrier types that we had previously. Now, that decision was also supervised, and I believe, correct me, Mr. Blake, was applauded by the FDA. See, I say applaud, he says accept, and he's right. They didn't say, wow, you guys are wonderful. They just said that solution is acceptable. Okay. So that is more accurate. Now, rolling that out to the whole fleet definitely does take some time, but I think, our point is that, of course, it's a safety item. No one is trying to implement it slowly. But on the other hand, going back in and making sure, because the cars actually do have a different shape, even though we're going to use the same kind of chain-type barriers, they have to be attached to these new cars in a different way. So there's a lot of discussion about, how hard is it to make a chain? Not very hard. How hard is it for us to identify the exact placement of this chain in every situation so that it works the same way that it does on cars that are shaped differently? And mainly what I'm talking about is the chain as close to the person standing on the platform or deeper in on the car. That depth is one piece that was very important. All of those things had to be worked out. So now they have a design, and now they know exactly where they're going to put these chains. So now it's just simply a task of cycling through the whole fleet and putting them out there. But, our position is that, because of the fact that the barriers have been there, it's not like there is nothing there to warn the customer. We're viewing this as an improvement. And so early, Mr. Blake says early, I use a celestial calendar. He uses even broader terms. A celestial calendar for me is it winter? Is it spring? So I'm gonna commit Mr. Blake to winter. You say winter goes all the way to March. We go to spring. The spring goes halfway through. It's not early anymore. All right. So this is what we'll do. I will go back and I will talk with the rail group, and we will try to give you a more precise completion date from them. Because I don't have a precise date at this point, but I know, given what Mr. Blake is saying, at least by the first half of 2018 it will be done. But I'm going to go back and try to get the quickest result that I can. Yes, Mr. Dr. Kozer.
Just a quick question. Since they're still delivering cars from Nebraska, I believe, Are they putting on the chains as they come in, or are we still getting the original model and WMATA is going to have to do the chains on site?
So the cars that are still coming in, or the cars that are here, will be done by the contractor in our yards. The new cars will have them made or placed on there at the time of development.
Good.
Yes. Nebraska.
We have one more customer.
Yeah, this is Thomas Clayton. My thing is the new cars going to be leveled out with the platform? Because, like, right now, I'm closing down the subway at 11 o'clock now. If I get stuck and somebody else gets stuck on the train, but we can't get off, would somebody help us be able to get come back to the stop where we needed to get off, to get out of the subway system? And, like, if the new train's going to be have sensors to know where the landing is, because I can't always get off the train at the stop that I want to get off at. Sometimes I have to go 2 or 3 or 4 stops down and then come back. Well, Harry, so I never worked that out, especially by yesterday down early, because I'm going to get stuck with some ass on this stuff.
Mr. Mayor, could we ask you, are there specific stations where you've had the trouble with the gap? Are you saying, do you believe the problem happens to you more often with the new cars? Or are you saying it happens more often in particular stations, no matter which car it is?
It happens at a particular station, no matter what car it is, mm-hmm. or what have you. And, like, it all depends on the car itself, I think, because, like, you can have the train or all the same cars, what have you, and, like, it would meet up at the landing at certain parts of the station, but other parts it won't. So it would be nice if you have a sensor, but also recognize that a wheelchair user might get stuck, and they might need help getting back before the station manager closes at the stop there to try to get off at.
So would our ADA director like to?
So the main thing we can do about that situation is we need you to be our eyes and ears out there and tell us where these things are happening.
Okay.
And not only where, but also the car number.
Okay.
So if you give me the car number, we can then, what we call it, is follow-up with calibration of these cars. Because the platform isn't changing,
right.
Our tracks aren't changing, so we have to make sure that our colleagues send the cars out, that they've been properly calibrated so that your vehicle, even if there's a lot of people on the train with you,
mm-hmm.
can still navigate on or off the train. And just like it would be if I was just on there by myself.
Right.
I mean, that's the calibration aspect. And then you have my office number.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not too many calls. You need to tell us every time this happens so that we can follow up on the vehicles and the location and find out what's happening.
All right.
That's the best way we can do it. The chain between the cars won't have anything to do with that. It's a different situation. But calibration of the cars is very important.
Okay.
And a device like yours can be a challenge, probably.
Yeah.
You need to be ready for it. The more you tell us where you're having these challenges, the better we can prepare for
that. Okay.
Zach, we're going to close out after
you. Yeah. My experience with Mr. Kent and Mr. Blake has been, no matter what time I go, but if I go in the rush hour, especially, the same train, same station, the difference between the platform and the train might be even, because the weight of the people in the compartment makes the train go down and makes them. So, it's really, it depends, and then not rush hour time. I find almost all stages, at least one or two buggies are really different in height, not all of them. So, question is it the train or the platform? or is the weight of that train, the passengers' quality, quantity, not quality, quantity makes a difference of the height. So those things should be, engineers should be figured out by taking empty one, put a lot of weight in there, see if it becomes level, or take the weight off and see how much difference it causes. It's a train itself, I don't think the compartment, I mean the platform, I think it's really correct.
That's correct. The answer to your question is yes. You know, I'll say this, we have seven systems of cars, the first of which is now, I believe, completely out of the system, so now we're back to six. Pardon? The four's out too, that's great. Okay. So, you know, I don't like to say before, I'm sure. But with the old cars being taken out of the system, there are fewer series in circulation. But what you said is exactly correct. The platform is where it is. Each train car's suspension and height can be, as Mr. Blake said, calibrated so that when it reaches the station, it's at the right height to be level with the platform. And it's a good thing that it is adjustable, frankly, because, you know, depending on which lines that we put the trains on and some of the different characteristics, it's good that we can make those changes if we need to. Now, there are, you know, as we learn of places in the system where there are problems, you know, we take specific action to go over and, you know, measure, and then, you know, especially again, since we told Mr. Manger that we know which car it was, you know, that we can solve the problem a lot faster. So you're absolutely right. The weight of the car, you know, the number of people on the car can definitely change as well. So, you know, we don't want to make this difficult for people, but the best thing you can do is report these to us as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Kent. We have a presenter this evening of the title six, and it's Corrine Laney. Is that correct?
Close. Okay. I'm actually Charlene Reed. Corrine, unfortunately, is not able to make it. Good evening, everybody. I'm new to WMATA. Okay, great. I'm new to Vermont. Again, my name is Charlene Reed. I've been here about a year and a half now. I've had experience with working with Title VI and environmental justice throughout my transportation career, and I'm really excited about being here in Metro, and as my family, because everybody really looks at Metro in awe. They're like, oh my gosh, you work in Metro. So I'm really excited to be here. And so tonight I'm here to talk about the update for the Title VI program. Every 3 years, we're required by the law to update our Title VI efforts. And what Title VI does, it looks at how we treat low-income minority individuals in relationships to fair service and what other items. So I'm going to do a little reading because the memorandum is technical. It has to be approved by the board, and I don't want to misspeak anything as I talk. So from reading, bear with me for a little bit. And if I'm, and as a disclaimer, if I am unable to answer any specific question that you have, I will make sure that we get a response back to you. So, I'm here to provide an update to this committee on Metro's 2017 Title VI program. This includes the Language Assistance Program, the Public Participation Program, and the Metro's Transit Service Monitoring, which includes fares and service. Let me put this in a little context. Title VI of the Civil Rights Act requires that any agency or organization that's receiving federal financial assistance cannot discriminate based on race, color, or national origin. Every 3 years, as I talked about, what WMATA has to do is to document what we do to ensure that we are not disproportionately impacting low-income and minority people. The guidance from the Title VI circular, which we follow, was introduced in 2012 as a new circular, and it has not changed since then. So essentially, what we're reporting this year, in October of 2017, is essentially based on comments that we received in 2014. So most of the components remain the same. The equity analysis for major service changes and fare changes will determine if any discrete impacts will occur for minority or low-income individuals. And I said that earlier as it relates to fare increases and service changes, any changes on the buses. Primary changes for the 2017 Title VI program are, we've updated the service standards and policies, we used to monitor whether services are distributed equitably among minority and non-minority populations. We updated the public participation plan, which described proactive strategies that Metro will use to engage minority and low-income individuals. And we updated our language assistance program. And that's how we deal with limited English proficiency individuals. Those individuals who ride Metro who don't speak English well, they may speak another language. So we updated that plan as well. On the system-wide service standards, policies, and monitoring, these are the changes that occurred. Rail peak period frequencies are 4 minutes rather than 3, and 8 minutes on other segments. On the red line, you'll see the trains happen more frequently than it has in the past, but other rail lines will see slow service. And I say slow, it's just adding a minute in terms of headway. We're updating rail on-time performance to reflect new data collection activities. So what we're doing now is that we're looking at when you tap in and when you tap out the system and how long that actually takes you to travel. And this is pre-SafeTrack data because we know we struggled with SafeTrack in terms of delays. So we stopped looking at monitoring pre-SafeTrack. On the public participation plan, in 2014, we had a robust campaign called Speak Up, It's Your Ride. And at that point, it was determined that we needed to have a public participation manager to correlate all of these activities. So the public participation manager is Lisa Schooley, and what she does is she interacts with each office when there's an activity that's going to occur, safe track, a bus change, get ready for Metro changes, and she makes sure that we pull information together that will let low-income and minority individuals know specifically what these changes are. Well, my office responsibility is in relationship to the PPP is to make sure we distribute information in all the different languages and that we go out and talk with community-based organizations that represent low-income individuals. So Lisa came on board, and as you are aware, we had a number of activities that have occurred in the last year or so. I'm hesitant to say how many times she went out, but in my short time here, I know I've been out at least 15 to 20 times to different organizations. Finally, in our language assistance plan, what we're going to do is we're going to do a needs analysis to determine if there are any new languages that we need to incorporate in our strategies. We're going to document the languages and the outreach activities that we undertook within from 2014 to 2016. And we want to have new strategies. And one of the new strategies that we're looking at is incorporating technology into our email outreach or into our technology. We just recently had a webinar in which you didn't necessarily have to come to JGB as you are here now. You actually could sign on and participate electronically. So we're going to encourage those kind of activities as we move forward. We also are creating an online language survey to help determine what the languages are that are spoken at home. So there are a number of robust activities that we're undertaking. We're trying to move forward in the 21st century to reach out electronically to individuals. And we're going to be more robust in how we interact with those individuals who are limited in their English proficiency. So I want to thank you for your time, and I will attempt to answer any questions that you have. And for those questions that I can't answer, I will definitely take them to the technical team, and we'll get back to you accordingly.
Okay. Do we have members who are Charlie?
Yeah. Thank you. I think I'm thank you for your presentation. And I gather from what you said that there is a pretty clear understanding of what the mandate is under Title VI. I guess what I have as a question, can you point to any specific thing that you've done yet at Metro that addresses Title VI in particular, you know, something like adding more service to a particular area, that kind of thing?
My responsibility as a workforce diversity and a transportation planner is to look at what's being proposed in terms of changes. And so being proactive, for example, going out, looking at the P18 and 19 and looking at the reduction of service for the K-12, my responsibility is to see how how it's going to impact those individuals who are transit dependent, and bring to the attention of engineers, transit planners, what those impacts will be. So I'm trying to be more proactive and trying to standardize a template so that questions specific to a particular community-based organization or a Title VI population is incorporated in the decision making. Then as it relates to increase the service or reduction of fare, we argue that the impact might be disproportionate, but again, there's equity analysis that are done by a different office that actually makes those determinations.
Anyone else have questions? Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for your support. What's included? I'm relatively new at this, but what's included in the equity analysis? What does that entail?
It takes a look at the age of buses. It takes a look at service, and it takes a look at travel time, and it looks at the system comprehensively. Because one of the things I didn't mention was that Metro has a majority minority ridership. 60% of Metro's ridership is minority. And so it compares it holistically to the whole system to determine if you're providing a better service or greater service for non-minority versus minority. And we didn't show any disparate impacts whatsoever on any of the service changes that we're promoting this year.
Excuse me, Jeff, is that a fair analysis? Because your ridership was down, I think, because maybe due to some technical problems where people were maybe a little reluctant to ride. Is that fair or not?
Our data actually, as I said, looks at pre-safety track numbers, because safety track actually skewed the ridership. You'll see numbers increasing as we're going back into our regular system, but people use alternate transit methods in order to get around, just because we're in state track. So state track numbers were not included in this, but in our 2017 to 2020, you'll see a more holistic number of that.
Okay, before, just in the warm one, I'm just learning all this stuff, so I might just get certain things. Before the same track, is there a pool of money that you use like for maintenance, and then there's a pool of money that you pull from sources where you get from maybe the government, or you get from the city, or you get from each underlying county or something for the maintenance prior to same track?
I can't answer that question. I'm not, honestly. That's just not my area of expertise. What I can do is try to get you some information about funding sources and how it's being distributed. But I wouldn't be able to give you a fair analysis of where the money is and where it goes, where it's coming from. So if you like, I can get your name and we can get that information back to you.
Okay. This is speaking of, you know, just how, you know, it got to the point where, okay, so you have finances where you're maintaining things on a regular basis, or you either have, you know, everything is up to par and you've spent the money. That's all I'm saying. But like my little business runs, that's how I run my little business. Either I have the money or I have product. Either I have product or I have the money. You know, so that's just how I just kind of look at it.
Let me jump in just real quick. So, Ms. Brooks, so no, this wasn't the budget situation. You're asking about SafeTrack. That was a matter of expediting needed maintenance. So the money was there. It wasn't spent on something else. We spent probably more money on maintenance than we actually had at the moment. That's why we had to make some other adjustments. But this was not about a budgetary matter as much as it was about expediting maintenance that had been deferred in the past.
Okay, so with the deferred maintenance, were you receiving money in the past that should have been, you know, spent some of the way? I mean, had you developed the silver line, you know, at that point in time? I'm just learning these things. I just got here, so I'm just trying to ask some questions.
We can be more detailed about it. So projects, those are capital funds, maintenance, is operating funds. And again, Safe Track was a matter of expediting necessary maintenance improvements that needed to be done in order to make a safe and reliable system.
Okay. Actually, Madam Chair, if I could just add something to Ms. Brooks, to her question. You know, you've asked really like the million dollar question at Metro, which is, okay, well, you know, why was Safe Track necessary? And, you know, what was there money that just wasn't used? And I think that the answer to your question is that for a very long time, and we're going back a number of years, more than, you know, 10, 20 years, that the amount of money that was needed to maintain Metro to the standard that we're realizing we need today, more money should have been spent, and more money was needed than what was actually given to Metro in all those previous years. And the reason why, honestly, is because Metro is funded by the jurisdictions. Every year they look at their budget, they hear what we ask for, and they give what they feel that they can. Now, obviously, you know, they hear us request money, and we have to convince them that it's really needed. And, you know, when the system was younger and it had fewer problems, it didn't look like, you know, it looked like you could get by, looked like you were still doing okay. But, you know, now that the system is 40 years old and it's starting to show signs of more wear and we have problems, you know, unfortunately now we have awakened to a new day here where it's not a new system anymore. So, you know, part of what Mr. Wiedefeld was trying to accomplish with Safe Track was to say, we're not going to be able to fix immediately all of the years of maintenance that wasn't done. Mm-hmm. But they prioritized what they thought was the most important and got basically, from what I understand, about 3 years worth of work done in one. And it was a very aggressive effort to get as much work done as quickly as possible so that we could at least get back to a place where, you know, as the slogan goes, back to where the system is relatively in good condition. Now that it's ending, if there's going to be more maintenance that's going to be needed in the future to finish that large body of work that we didn't get to in prior years. But this time, when Metro is talking to everyone, the jurisdictions, the federal government, now we're drawing them a bigger picture that says, you know, not only do we need to pay attention to how much money we need for the system this year, but how much money do we need in future years to really get the system onto a maintenance cycle where we don't fall back and have the kind of service problems that we've seen that have affected people's perception of Metro, brought the ridership down, and hurt our budget, and now we're trying to crawl back out of that hole. So, I mean, that's my understanding of what our situation is. But thank you for your question.
Okay, thank you.
Thomas?
Yeah.
Mr. Trudeau, Mr. Chair, Mr.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Herb Trigger. I'm the new guy at this table, but I've been in Alexandria since 1980, and since 1980 I've been watching Metro bus lines disappear from our city, and I can look around Fairfax County because I've gone to school there and watch Metro bus lines disappear there and in Arlington as well. So, and I've seen Alexandria, Arlington, and Fairfax County adding bus service. I don't know if there's a direct cause and effect relationship. My question is, how do you factor in the availability of local jurisdiction funded transport services or bus services when you look at a reduction in Metro bus routes? Because as an Alexandria taxpayer, I'm wondering why I'm paying for Metro and I'm also having to pay for the DASH system. Why am I paying for two bus services? And it affects the lower, and I'm not in the west end of Alexandria, so believe me, I'm not Old Town. I'm not one of the Old Town people. How do you factor in local availability of local bus service when you look at Metro bus reductions? Thank you.
Another excellent question. I am very happy the new members are putting us to work. This is great. Let me just say that the difference between Dash and Metrobus in Alexandria, just as an example, you know, yes, you're paying for both through your dollars, but the intention is that the two services are not duplicative, but rather complementary, in the sense that Dash runs circulating services within the city of Alexandria, and when Metrobus comes into Alexandria, it's connecting Alexandria to the rest of the region. So what happens is that whenever you see those Metro buses pulling out, you know, over many years, some of the jurisdictions actually asked to take over some of the service from Metro. They said, okay, you know, we can do that ourselves. We're going to brand it differently. We're going to make it, you know, friendly to the people who live in this community, and we're going to customize it. And so then came a bit of a dichotomy between regional and non-regional routes. So the idea is that the bus services in Fairfax and Arlington and in Alexandria and frankly Montgomery and Prince George's County too, you know, that they are the non-regional services where those jurisdictions felt like they could meet their needs better. So the thing is that when we look at Title VI, I mean, the fact is that it's a regional activity. And my understanding is that they are that both sets of systems are taken into consideration, because a resident is you know, the issue is, you know, if a service that's there is taken away, but the other service is there and it's still usable, you know, some of that has to do with whether or not there's a disparate impact. It's much more acute in areas where if Metro takes Metro bus service away, and there are fewer or no alternatives for those residents to take advantage of, that's a pretty stark impact. And person, you know, particularly a low-income individual's ability to access employment or medical care or other services that they would need.
Thomas.
We can come back to
you soon.
I'll be ready.
Yes, thank you. Okay, my question is this. When you do your surveys and testing out the bus routes and whatnot, do you put in account the people that might live in those different neighborhoods that have a disability that might need that bus route? Because, like, although they might not catch it all the time or what have you, but if you take away that bus route, you could make them very dependent on whoever they're living with. And like, if they live with family, family is not that healthy. So, but the thing is though, they need the freedom to be able to go out. So, as y'all asking people, you put on signs about, if you live in a neighborhood and you want the bus route to stay running, because you have a disability and whatnot, and it might be too difficult for you to go out 10 blocks to get to another bus stop or what have you, could you call in or what have you, and maybe instead of canceling the bus route, you could like slow it down, you know, and have less bus service in that area. So that way, the people who need it could still have it.
That's an excellent point. Thank you. That's one of the points that I actually argued with the change proposed for the K-12 in Prince George's County, because on Central Avenue, the grade of the roadway goes up a little, and I was saying that anyone who had an issue would be challenged. But it is important that you respond to the surveys either online or through telephone to make yourself heard, because without public participation, decisions are going to be made which they may not be aware of, that one or two individuals specifically need a particular service. So it's always important that if you see someone on a bus asking you for information regarding your bus line, please take the time to answer those questions. If you see a survey at the Metro Rail, please take the time. I'm almost certain that many of you all will take the time. But my experience was on the K-12 that we literally had to kind of run rush for people in order to get that information. And the K-12 is an important line because it travels throughout Prince George's County and the headways are about an hour apart. I argue, who wants to wait an hour or more? But if you're not answering the survey, if you don't participate, then we're challenged with those decisions. So I do want to encourage you all, if you can't reach the individuals that have given the survey or our public participation office, call our Office of Civil Rights. We'll take that information down for you.
Ma'am, in your report, are you including Metro Access users? Because the fare, our fare is calculated by the bus and rail. So if you eliminate a bus line or it runs less, it affects the fare. Now, some people recently were paying $3.20 and $3.50. Now they're at $4. Now, to come back from that same location, they're going to pay $6.50 because the bus isn't running in the middle of the day. This is, it's not going to rush hour, it's just there's no service, so then you have to pay more. So is your report including
Metro Access? Coordinates with our Office of Planning, and before they take out any services, they actually determine what's going to happen as a result. The report specifically is going to look at Metro, Rail, and Bus. It won't look at Metro Access specifically, except for as it relates to language assistance. But we can encourage that those dialogues get incorporated into the program. And certainly, that's a request that we actually give information, but I understand the change is going to impact the
issue. Yes, it has drastically changed the charge that people on fixed incomes are paying for the doctor. So a trip that used to be $3.20, $3.50, so coming and going, seven is now $10 or more. That's a lot.
So I take wholeheartedly what you all are saying, and as I sit in the meetings, I will definitely bring your positions to the table to make sure that they are heard.
We have two more people who want to make comments, but we're running tight, so can you make it quick, please? Sorry.
This is Tina Okolabia, like Herb Prager. I'm also a brand new member. What I'd like to bring up is related to what Herb brought up with the outburst. He's losing buses or bus service. In Montgomery County, in October this year, there will be something called EXTRA, a system, I suppose, supported by Montgomery County, for Montgomery County customers. And in 2020, there's going to be another system added on called Board Bus Rapid Transit. Now, these two systems are, I suppose, going to be carried by Montgomery County funding. On the other hand, are we at the Access Advisory Committee, do we have any jurisdiction over what these transit systems do? And if so, perhaps we could look into the kind of buses that are going to be running in October of this year, and certainly the new buses that will come online in 2020. Do we have jurisdiction, and if so, can we look at this?
Yeah, I'd like to make a suggestion. You're new, but one of the things you'll learn is that we are all representatives of specific areas, and all of those areas have their own disability committees. So there's one for Montgomery, there's one for Alexandria, there's one for Arlington. And so the input that you have as a member of this committee is to be a representative to your local committee and act through them.
Meeting on Wednesday.
Exactly. The other thing that you will find is that WMATA staff is in close contact, particularly with the buses. Jim Hammery, who is the WMATA bus person, is in close contact with the different jurisdictions, so there is interaction at that level. But as an individual, you have a lot of power by talking to your commissioners and by participating through your own disability community. And that's important not just for the buses, but when it comes to funding, it's time to go to your local commission funding to make sure they fund WMATA at the level that WMATA needs to be funded. So it's really a dual role.
I'm aware that Montgomery County has it. Several of these advisory committees.
My question, though, is since we are a regional body looking at access of the different transit systems, do we have any role in what these systems, are, the new systems that are in Montgomery County and perhaps Newlands elsewhere, do we have any role in that? In addition to my going there and making a fuss if things don't seem right.
The makeup of the WMATA board is also jurisdictional, and a number of the members of the board are elected officials and commissioners within their jurisdiction. So again, when we report to the board not only hears about WMATA, but they also hear about what's going on in the other counties. And so there's basic cooperation and interaction, and it's a question of getting the word out. You're sitting next to the chair of the Fairfax County Disability Committee, and so Tappan can probably give you some input about the way that works. And over the course of the first year, you'll hear us talking about a lot of the interactions that we've had in the past. But it's communication, communication, communication. And we have to do more than come in once a month and have a sandwich.
Okay.
Thank you. Ms. Bellamy is the last one. One follow-up. And not everybody is able to see them or what have you. So, if you have them on commercial, I have them on the radio, what have you, you can reach out to more and more people with disabilities so they be able to put their comments in.
I appreciate that. We are definitely moving towards becoming much more powerful and compliant as one of the technology strategies moving forward. Let me end by saying I appreciate your time and attention. I think Ms. Rosa.
My question pretty much piggybacked on some of the things that were already said. As you mentioned, there was like an independent report done. How much was that discussed prior to the decided times when the services were in different neighborhoods? And also, since the Metro Rail actually stops at 11:30 and a lot of people in different neighborhoods actually have to go to work and work later hours, is the bus service supplementing that?
It is. I bought the brochure to talk. I hope you all have had an opportunity to get ready for Metro changes when the changes went into effect on the 25th. There are a number of different items within this brochure. It's also on WMATA.com. And we have translated it in several different languages, but it talks about complementary services for those individuals who work day and night. One of the biggest challenges we had in our conversation was about low-income individuals who work at night, who are in the service industries, and how they get back and forth home. And so the bus services are supposed to be complementary to the service changes for the rail. I don't think it's going to replace it, but it's supposed to complement. So if you haven't had an opportunity to get a copy of this brochure, I bought a copy, but I will make sure that we get some to you. I also bought a copy of our Title VI brochure. It talks about how you might file a complaint if you feel you've been discriminated by a bus operator or a rail operator or any WMATA employee. So I'll leave those as well. And I'll also leave my card because I really do want to encourage the committee to contact me or representatives from my office so that your voice can be heard in the Title VI process as we move forward. We can only assume that we are catering to your needs, but we'd like to hear more from what your challenges are, more of what you need for us to say in these different meetings. And my number is right here. Feel free to give me a call at any time. Feel free to email me because my job is to make sure you have a voice on plans to change fares for services here in Metro.
Well, thank you for coming this evening. Now we're going to hear from Ms. D. Moore, some administrative.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Okay, I think I'm on the board. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, hold on a second. Chair. We just want to start with welcoming the new members. We actually have five new members and five returning members. The new members are being vocal, which is absolutely great. That's what we love. And so we're excited to see all the new members here and welcome them to the committee. We have a few things that I just wanted to go over in the list of the information, mainly about what's going to be happening in the structure of the committee. I want to just stress to everybody the importance of reading minutes and studying up on information prior to coming to the meeting and being prepared. It's just really important, as I'm sure the new members heard when they were here in June participating as a member of the public, but here studying the committee and understanding the topics and the interests that the committee was doing. They learned about the committee's concerns as it relates to dedication and commitment on the committee and the importance of attendance to the meetings and so forth. So I just wanted to just plug that information in terms of the structure and the role. What you have here today is the Vice Chair, Ms. Denise Rush, of the full committee of the AHT, and Elva Ariza Silver, who is the second Vice Chair running the meeting today. Our chair, Patrick Sheehan, I will give an update to everybody. I don't know if everybody is aware, at the last Metro Access meeting, which was, I guess, in June, maybe a little over 3 weeks ago, he fell and had damaged his, I think it's right arm, pretty bad, fell pretty bad, to the point that he had to get a cast on it. And for Patrick, everybody knows that Patrick is visually impaired, and so he needs that hand for the cane, and then he needs the other hand, as he shared with me, for his beloved briefcase. And so he was having a challenge with getting around. However, he was by the doctor off for 2 weeks, and he just started back to work this week with the cast, and he said it wasn't going well. Only because he cannot type as well as he used to, so everything's a lot slower for him. However, he is due to get it off the cast this week, and he has told me that he will be here at the meeting next week to say hello to everyone and to welcome new members. So he apologized for not being here, but definitely very capable hands with the current leadership that we have. The board is made up of 20 members that we have. We have also one emeritus member. That will be Mrs. Karen Bellamy. She is a pillar in the community and a strong advocate. She has served the disability community and the AAC for quite a number of years. So we're happy that she's continuing to serve with us as an emeritus member. We also have two members from the Access for All Committee that serves with us. They are actually appointed members, and that would be Charlie Crawford. He is one member from the Access for All, and of course, we have Doris Ray as our other member for the Access for All Committee. And so the leadership rounds out with the Metro Access Subcommittee Chair, which is called Summer Ford, and then we also have Denise Rush, who's also serving as a Vice Chair to that. What we don't have present here today is any of our bus rail folk. I will share that Ed McAtee was not feeling well, and so he said he wasn't able to make the meeting tonight. He serves as second Vice Chair and is serving in that capacity. We do not have anybody for Chair or Vice Chair. The Vice Chair and Chair of the Bus Rail Subcommittee both sought not to have an additional term, and so the Chair of the Bus Rail Subcommittee, which was Brian Miller, is now going to serve on the Commission for Disability in Alexandria. So Mr. Trigger, you might run into him. Yeah, so you'll run into him there, and I believe that our Vice Chair, which is Breanne Berger, she's a strong advocate, so I know she's not going anywhere, but I'm not sure where she's landed yet, so I'm sure we'll hear from there. The next thing I want to talk about is the calendar.
It's in your packet. If everybody can look through their packet and see, you'll have a calendar that should be right behind, just before your bus rail information. So you'll have information about the calendar. The reason why I'm bringing the calendar to your attention is I want to note that the AAC follows the board's calendar, and therefore we won't be in the month of August. The AAC also this past week asked for an adjustment in the calendar where we didn't meet on the previous Monday, which would have been July 3rd. So I'm asking members to review the calendar, and if there are any days that or times for any of the meetings that the AAC wants to eliminate, then we can make that change on the calendar and then have a complete calendar to be distributed not only to members and the public. Does anybody have any comments about the calendar? Okay, I guess this balance means a no. The September 5th date. Okay, so when there is a star on it, it means that the meeting day is actually a Tuesday and not a Monday. So some days, you know, we normally meet on a Monday, but when a Monday is a holiday, the meeting day automatically falls to the Tuesday. So any place that you see a star means that that's going to be a Tuesday meeting day for any of the AAC bus rail or Metro Access Subcommittee.
All right,
it
means that
Would you say something over here in the corner, please?
Me?
You.
about metro access.
I mean, with that, we try not to move that because the customers are there all the time. I'm there all the time.
If we're not here, how would the customers talk about anything?
And they come dedicated to the meetings all the time.
And they know that if holiday is on the Monday, that they're expecting the meeting to be on Tuesday. So where are we going to move it to?
Okay, I understand. Well, I don't mean like that. No, I'm trying to pull myself down, but I'm very passionate on what I'm supposed to do. I represent the customers.
I understand. I really apologize.
I don't want to be seen massive. I just know that I get calls every day, and I know people don't believe that we're working sometimes.
Well, I understand. Okay. Because that can be called that we do go over the same things quite often.
This Dino Club, yeah, I believe that we adopt the schedule that's printed.
I second it.
Oh, hard in here, too.
Can we vote on it? Okay. Well,
you say
all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we can do it.
Okay, thanks, Madam Chair.
How does somebody get sick and somebody
I just wanted to share that new member orientation will be held July 17th, which is next Monday. It will start at 6 p.m. and end at 7 p.m. Although the leadership is always there, but of course, other members that want to stay and talk to new members are definitely welcome. But we'll be holding new member orientation, and it will occur in this room. It'll be immediately after the bus rail / metro access subcommittee meetings. Elections, the AAC will hold elections for the chairman, vice chair, and second vice chair of the AAC. In your package, you all have the job descriptions for the chair and the second vice chair. It's in the packet information so that you all can read and study that information. I want to say that all members, all 20 members, are eligible to be nominated and to have served according to the bylaws. But I will stress the importance of members to recognize the needs and expectations of those roles as they are interested in as they're interested in serving. The nominations can include self-nominations, and a nominee must accept the nomination for that one position. Everyone will have an opportunity to campaign for before final votes that come in October. Nominations can be made today at this meeting and at the two subcommittee meetings in July.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
May I ask a question? Yes, ma'am. My question is, we redid the bylaws. When we redid the bylaws, my understanding is that you can't hold off more than 2 years. Now, I have some concerns that we have.
No, I think it's a 2 years.
20 years.
You can have two terms for 2 years. Two terms for 2 years.
That's 4 years.
That's what I'm saying. That's what the bylaws say. And 2015, that's what we voted. And so the members that you have now, that's their first 2 years. And if they are voted in or nominated, they can run one more 2 years. Am I correct, B?
Yeah, you're correct. But then at the same time, somebody could nominate somebody else for the position.
Yes, again, yes.
She
stated that everybody at this table who's on the committee can be nominated.
There's one point, Ms. Bellamy, that I think you're asking about
when the AAC did the bylaws a few years ago, they did not address the issue of prior service. And because they didn't address the issue of prior service, then the clock technically reset. So in 2015, your current leadership served their first term, and now they're able to serve a next term if elected. But everybody is open to be nominated for that role.
Can I nominate someone today?
You can nominate someone today.
I would like to nominate the man on the right of me. Bill Clark.
As the chair.
As the chair.
Chair from the AAC.
Yeah. And the reason for that, man, my nominee right now, he has been serving us all the time. He has been going to meetings. He understands the problems. And he's worked hard. He knows what it's all about. So he should be the chair.
I'd like to second that.
Thank you.
I'll third it.
Anybody else want to do a nomination? You're welcome to do it at this time, but we have some more information, but I'll take the nomination.
Can I ask one question? This is not about who can or cannot be nominated. I just want to remind the committee that from stepping up, Doc, let me know. Now, you were telling me, or you know, this past year, part of your service or part of your time was in.
We already said
it. You've already addressed
we it. We already have addressed it. Okay. We're not riding the trolleys. We already have talked.
Yes.
You know when I nominate somebody, we've already talked. Okay. We've already been there.
Are there any more nominees for tonight? It's not necessary. You might do it tonight. Are there any more nominees for tonight?
I have changed.
And God bless you. Don't change it.
I feel good.
James Brown.
I'm not that different.
Okay, now.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Any more nominees for tonight? All right. Okay, we need to move on quickly. We have finished?
No, we have more information. I just want to share. Nominations can include self-nominations and must be accepted. They must be accepted. Everyone will have an opportunity to campaign. The vote will be done electronically. So as in 2 years ago, you'll get an electronic ballot. Each member will keep an individual one and will respond back to that email. Mr. Blake has said that he will be the proxy for this. And so he will hand that and he will know exactly who has been voted to what and so forth. October, we'll find out at the October meeting.
Misty?
Yes.
It reminded Jackson last year. I still had the same objection. My problem is, I trust you. I care. But I think some member from here should also be on with him. I said last year, I still say that somebody else in this committee should also know how to vote for. Last year, I wasn't overruled. I got sick. I talked about it before.
So, but first of all, I have to inform the committee that Mr. Blake said off of the microphone that he will make sure that there's no hacking by foreign in the election. And I think that's wonderful. Now, you know, Ms. Bellamy's comment, I think, is that she feels that a member of the committee should be present to certify the results of
now,
the
election. No, sir, we argued about this years ago, me and you. Mm. We're still arguing. I still think that somebody from the committee,
yes,
who's not voting, like me, I'm not going to let go. So Jim Marshall.
I never nominate you for it. I like to know.
Thank you,
Carolyn. If you could just get around to what you want
to
do.
You know what?
A lot of trouble.
You know what? I don't have a vote.
Excuse me. We still have time, and we still have time to get this straightened out the way that everybody is
okay.
Happy, but we have to move on.
Okay.
Mrs. Kidd?
Yes, ma'am.
When are the new buses going to be released on the street?
Do you have the finish?
For some reason, the chair doesn't seem to want this more window finish or work scene.
She was going to go.
Well, at least one person at a time.
Yes.
So let's do this massively. Madam, are we going to let Ms. Lee to finish the report and then move on with the agenda for the next item? I think that we have elections, and we have time for the elections coming up in October. So let's not to use the time for this right now. But if you agree, Madam Chair, can we just allow Ms. Lee to continue quickly and move on with the agenda?
I'm sorry, you can continue.
Ms. Brooks, I saw you had your hand up.
Yeah, I just got a quick question about the election. As a new member, are there any bios included for the new members so when you vote, they'll know who we're potentially casting a vote for?
Yes, ma'am. The reason why the vote is not happening this month, as it generally does, the AEC has requested that members have an opportunity to meet and get to know other members. At your next meeting, the orientation, you'll have a full packet of information that it will include the bylaws, the bios, and a bunch of other information that we just didn't give at this meeting because this is a different type of meeting. So you'll have that information, and again, you'll be able to nominate someone or yourself to participate in a leadership role if you choose to. Thanks. Just wanted to quickly also share that there will be some subcommittee appointments too, so we'll need a chair and vice chair of the bus route subcommittee. There are no appointments for the Metro Access Subcommittee. Those chairs have indicated that they wanted to remain and participate there. I also want to bring to your attention the work plan. There is a new format for the work plan. So if you all look in any packet, it doesn't really matter which one you look in because the format you will see has changed. I will, we can talk about it a little bit more, but I, at a later date, because I know we're pressed for time, but I wanted to highlight the issue or the concern that some of the members have had in relationship to attendance and how can we address the issue of attendance and improve attendance at all of the meetings. And one way that with return we possibly can do that is with improving the work plan and having more buy-in for memberships on the work plan of the actual items that are discussed and so forth. So you'll see the new format there. When we talk about work plan, which we will definitely do so when we return in September, we will talk about work plan at those subcommittee levels and at the full committee level. And at that time, we'll be using this new format and asking members to describe exactly what they want and qualify what they want to be added to that work plan. Again, it's just part of our way of trying to help participation as one method of it, and improving the work plan is there. The last piece I want to talk about is the Accessibility Excellence Awards. They are coming up in November 2017. The AAC has nominations, or they solicit nominations for the Richard W. Hettinger Award, and that is an award in honor of the former Accessibility Advisory Chair of this particular committee, and that award goes to a person or a business whose efforts have resulted in significant improvements in public transportation for people with disabilities. So I'll be looking to the committee for nominations on that. And I also want to say that the Metro does the Rosalind Steiner Award, the Dr. Rosalind Steiner Award. And that goes for an advocate who advanced the field of accessible transportation and education and training is what that award's for. So please mark your calendar. You're going to hear more about this Accessibility Excellence Award, and we definitely hope all members will be in participating at the event this year. Madam Chair, I'm finished. Thank you.
Yes.
You got it tight?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my report?
Yes.
Oh, you know me. Give me 2 minutes. 2 minutes. That's all I need.
Okay.
2 minutes. I got you. So we had our subcommittee meeting last month. We had our normal Michael Wilson Award with staff member from Metro Access is awarded for their performance. And what else do we have here? We had a very, very good discussion, robust discussion about the Ranger GPS mapping system by Nicole Murray. And she discussed some of the upgrades to that system, some of its limitations, and some of the things that current partners they're working on for the future in terms of integrating the traffic so you get real time information. Which we put on our work plan, which will hopefully, I see she will be coming back to us this year to report more about. So that's very promising. The other thing we discussed was we have gotten customer comments about the service itself as usual. And we also discussed, you know, the new Metro Access van to a certain degree. Anything else that happens?
Yeah, that's about it.
And that's about it. We also talked about the customer guide. There will be updates to it for Ms. Allison Anderson. So the expectation is that we will get these new guides hopefully by around the bus on Ms. Anderson around, I would say, October, is it correct?
She's talking about
this.
Okay.
All right, so that's an approximation of when we might get the guides in our hands, the revisions.
Are we going to have a bus rail report?
Yes, ma'am, I can share what the bus rail subcommittee did since the second vice chair is unavailable. The committee had a discussion about bus stops in Prince George's County from Jim Hamry. I will note that Jim Hamry will also be at the meeting on July 17th. He will be talking about state of good operations on Metro Bus. So quite an interesting discussion about bus stops in Prince George's County. There was some information about the work plan and what the bus road subcommittee was interested in adding to the work plan. That kind of rounds it up, Madam Chair.
Okay. Mr. Kent, when are the new buses going to be released?
Ms. Rush, I sense your question. Now, looking to and fro, Ms. Allison Anderson is here today. Ms. Allison Anderson, supportive person that she is. And I was just going to ask, you know, do we have an update on when any vehicles are going into service? Do you know? As she approaches the microphone, would you kind of step inside?
Good evening. We are hoping that within the next 30 days that we will be able to start to put the new vehicles into service.
All right,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Kent.
Oh,
when are you going?
Is he going? Thank you, Mr. Kent.
Don't leave yet. When are you going to let the committee critique the buses? Because we were changed. We did not get the opportunity to get our input. You've heard it, so we have them. But we need to know what to expect. And what to be able to discuss with customers and clients. And we have not experienced ourselves. And you owe us that. So we're there.
Okay. This is the plan. We have a meeting with Ford. Staff has a meeting with Ford.
Mm-hmm.
First, you're going to sit down with them and tell them the concerns and the improvements that we want to see. We already knew about when we placed the order, heard again when some of you saw the prototype when it was out here. during that meeting, we plan to ask them to come back and be, and make themselves available to you on the committee. And in between the two visits, you all will be given the opportunity to see and critique the vehicle and put into the record all of your observations about it, so that when Ford comes back, you will be ready to address all
of
your
questions. Do you know the date that you want to see Ford, so that I will know what date I'm going to see the vehicle?
Oh.
Yeah, I want a date. Okay, hold on. But, you know, I hear things, and is there a recall on the vehicle budget already? A manufacturer or safety or what kind of recall?
There has been a notice that's been given out to us that there is a repair that needs to be made to the vehicle, with, you know, no later than 30,000 miles of use. So it's not something that has to be done immediately, but it's something that needs to be done in our system probably within 7 or 8 months.
What is the recall?
Later. I do not have enough technical detail with me to tell you all about this information, but I will tell you that it is something that, if it's not done, could become a safety issue. So it has to be, it does have to be done.
Okay.
So what we're doing is, all of the, first of all, only half of the vehicles have been delivered. The other half are still in manufacture at this point. These repairs will be made to the other half before they get here. So all Metro has to do is take care of the ones that are already here. So what you're doing is you're scheduling, we're putting them on a schedule to rotate them in and have them done, starting probably, I would say, within a few weeks.
So when are you going to give us the date?
The date of what?
The date that we're going to critique the bus.
When I will be able to give you that date when I am prepared to release the vehicles into service. And releasing the vehicles into service, that decision is tied to our discussions with Ford and with the protocol that we're going to put together to affect the repair that you just mentioned.
Oh, well, Ms. Anderson, I thought she said hopefully within 30
days. Well, that is true. Yeah. What she said, that's right. That's true. But she said a date, and she gave you a range.
Okay.
She let her get away with giving you a range.
Well, you know,
but she insisted that I provide you with that date. So.
You and I are so close, we can do that. You know,
yeah, we are. We are. She, did you hear that, Albert? We're close. Did you see that? He's sprinting over there.
And he's like, God, when do you hope to roll it out with the revisions? What was the expected time? I think you said around October, maybe, with the revised customer
guide. With the revised customer guide, that is the plan. Now, plan could, you know, change a little bit, but that is the plan.
And it will have the audio option for those who need it, as Ms. Rush brought up a while ago, if I remember, right?
Yes. As we always do.
Okay.
Yes.
Ms. Rush, just to answer your question, our meeting with Ford is going to be this week.
Oh, okay. So the date's getting closer.
It's getting closer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
It's in a secure, undisclosed location, because I know you have a tendency to come over to the building, and I just don't want the front door to be barricaded so the Ford reps can't get inside. So I can come for you.
Okay, so Elvin wants to talk about the program that we're going to have with the letter that we want to present to the board.
As you might be aware, we initiated last meeting about the travel initiative to invite board members to travel with us during a specific time with a board member with a different person with a different disability. So that letter is enclosed on your material electronically and also on your package today. I don't want to read the letter, but I please encourage you to read the letter. And if you have any feedback, please let us know as soon as possible, because this letter is going to be sent out to the board very quickly. I just want to share with you that it is called 2017 Drive With Me travel initiative. So if you have any suggestions, changes, please do, you know, feel free to submit your comments and we'll take it from there. But as you might know, this is going to be held in October in a celebration of the National Disability Equal Employment Awareness Month. So just pretty much what I wanted to share with you, that is moving on. After we send the letter, we are going to have another notification to you all by email to see who wants to be part of. I think we are going to have a subcommittee, and we are going to be informing to each one of you how this is going to be organized. But please take the time to read the letter, inform yourself, and please, when we meet again, don't say I didn't know, because everything is on the package. I do not have anything else to say right now.
Just one comment.
Yes, Mr. Faye.
You list the BC camp as one of the things for the board members, and that would be appropriate for the BC board members. You might want to also list Accessoride, because that will be in function sometime in the fall, and Marilyn reps on the board might want to ride Accessoride.
Madam Chair, before we move forward, on this piece, I just wanted to share or add to what Vice Chair Elver said about this document. It'll actually go out with the board report. And so it's there, it's coming up. We have to always send stuff out the week ahead. The board meets on the 27th, I believe, of this month, before they go into their recess session. So this letter will go out at that time. And if there are any comments and so forth, I definitely would appreciate knowing them now, just so that we can get the letter completed and signed, and then forward it to the board secretary's office to prepare for the board's correspondence.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. We have a comment, please. The question I have is, this is an issue that we discussed in the last meeting, right?
Yes.
And we voted to yes, we're going to follow up on this with the board members. Now, why is it not included on the chairman's letter to the board? Why it has to be separate?
Why is what not included? I'm sorry, Captain, I missed it.
Yeah.
Why is the letter separate and not included in the letter to the chair?
By the chair, ACGM, the summary that will be included, why can't we summarize and put a paragraph on the same letter?
Well, what we did at the last meeting, we approved going forward with the proposal and have Elver draft that for this meeting to get final approval.
Yeah.
So in the minutes it says, we'd like the program, but we didn't have a detailed description of the program, and that's what this letter is,
okay.
A detailed decision. So that's why it's in the minutes that we said, go ahead with it and put it together. And this is what we asked him to do.
Ms. B, I think that you would like to say something, please.
The letter is actually an attachment to the board report, and it'll just be included in there. It's an invitation to the board, the GM, and the executive staff or the senior staff to participate in the travel initiative. And so we'll have more information and correspondence that will be included in the board report after the fact. But this is just our formal invitation to Metro about this initiative.
Thank you, Ms.
All right, Phil, then we got
to... I'll be really fast. WMATA implemented new schedules for buses, trains, and also new fares this past week. And there were some unintended consequences for Metro Access riders. For the new members of the committee, if you don't ride Metro Access, the fare on Metro Access is calculated as twice the fastest fare going from one point the other point on your trip. And so depending upon the timing of the bus service and the timing of the rail service, the fare might actually be twice the bus fare or twice the rail fare. And that can be as much as a $2.50 difference. Previously, it was easy to count. calculate what was happening because we knew what the schedules were and we knew when peak schedule and off-peak schedule was. But these changes don't follow peak and off-peak. They follow use in various areas. And so the problem is that it's possible to have a $4 trip going and a $6, $50 trip coming home. And it's not easy to calculate. I've spoken with Mr. Kent, and we do have a finance committee on the AAC, and the staff is going to work with the finance committee to gather the data that's necessary to put forward a proposal. It's similar to what we did with the fare calculator. For new members, the fare calculator now exists because in the old system, there could be as many as 120,000 different fares during the 30-minute window that you booked your ride on Metro Access. And so the system developed the fare calculator, and we asked the lobby to get WMATA to give us the lowest fare that was available during that 30-minute window when you booked your reservation. And so we're going to go through something very similar. We're going to gather data out there as to what does exist, what can be done to make the fare understandable and simple enough so that somebody knows when they book their rides, this is what the fare is going to be. They're not going to be surprised by an extra 50 cents, extra dollar, extra $2.50. So that's what we brought up, and staff has been very cooperative with us, and we're going to work on that the way we worked on the fare calculator.
Well, the thing is, on the news it said that they were going to be refunding money to rail users because it was miscalculated. But if our Metro Access fares are calculated by Metro Rail, Metro Bus, then our fares were miscalculated. Is that correct?
Yes, and that's a similar system that we have to look at. Again, Mr. Parr was the one that worked with us, and we will have his. He's been promoted now. So we will have somebody else in that office work with us and find out what the errors were made on the bus and the rail fares. They were basically the rail fares because they miscalculated the distances. And so the numbers that they have in refunds for the rail riders for the last 10 years will be applicable to Metro Access riders because we have those records also. So again, it's a question of having the same computer staff that's calculating numbers for the rail, apply that to what we have to do for the Metro Access fares. So that, again, those errors were in the area of 10 to 20 cents. We're talking about $2.50. So we will get all those numbers and we will lobby those things down.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
In the words of John F. Kennedy, I think it's time for us to adjourn.
Okay. We is adjourned. Right. Can I get a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.